Boop. Oh, well, I guess I got to do this.
It's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaverHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
Candia Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Vivac Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Lara Vineyards and Winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelt.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at TommyBirdRidgeWinery.com. My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that, you know, just a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Waltz, W-A-L-T-Z, vineyard, with an S, don't forget the F, .com.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive. P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Hey. I got to do that to keep warm.
Yes, it is cold out here. It's 57 degrees over here. It is probably where you're at, still in the 70s. I don't know. It's cold over there, too.
It's dropped down. It's in the 50s here, upper 50s. It didn't get that warm today anywhere, I don't think.
No, yet. No. And I'm seeing the low tonight, like in the mid-30s, mid to upper 30s, so that'll be interesting. Welcome to Florida.
Yeah, really. Although it's still much better than most of the states up north right now.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, especially that nasty storm that's heading up that way. My sister, in fact, I mentioned this before, I have family in Kansas City, Missouri, and they hit 75 3 days ago and got 2 inches of snow today.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's,
sorry about that. And then you have Georgia and the Northeast are getting tornadoes again. So it's strange winter. But speaking of winter, we have South Dakota again tonight. And I don't know if they ever escape winter up there, but one of those things.
It gets warm in the summers, though. I was reading some stuff. Speaking of South Dakota, usually before we start a state, I usually give a little bit of background and stuff on it and everything. And I missed that last week. I don't know why I missed it last week, but I did. And I want to fill you in this week. I do want to let people talk about some or tell them about what we're going to do and about the state that we're in and all that. So let me pull some of this stuff up here and tell you about some of the things about South Dakota that is so interesting. South Dakota is located in north central United States. I suppose that would be pretty much central. It is a U.S. state. It was established in 1889. Total area of the state is 77,116 square miles. The grapes produced there, we talked last week to Dave. He filled us in quite a bit on that. But this shows Dishonac, Idlewild, Frontenac, K. Gray, which I'm not sure what a K. Gray, Mike just let me know that our guest tonight from Reno, South Dakota, it is currently minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit there, which is just bloody cold. Ooh, yeah, you're right. Thanks, those people. La Crosse, Niagara, Sauvignon Blanc. There's all sorts of, hybrid type grapes and stuff coming out of that area there. The state is, let me pull this one up here. Oop, that's not what I want to tell you about. This is what I want. Nope, that's not what I want to tell you about. Jeez, where is it? Here we go. Okay. The state has quite a few counties. It's got 66 counties out in the western part of the state, larger counties than the east. It has only two major interstates that run through it, 29 and 90. 90 runs east to west, and 29 runs north-south. The 29 is on the far eastern side of the state, which runs through Sioux Falls and on up that area. Pierre, which we learned last week that it's not Pierre, but Pierre. Pierre is the state capital. It is located almost smack dab in the middle of the state. Actually, not on 90, but north of 90. 83 takes you north up to Pierre. And then on the western side of the state, you have Rapid City. So that pretty much sums up the roads to the state. Not a whole lot of major arteries running through South Dakota. Elevations. It's the lowest spot tends to be on the very southeast corner. That is about 600-700 feet there where the the lowest spot is 966 feet, and that is on southeast corner of the state where state of South Dakota hits Iowa. And the highest point in the state is Harney Peak, which is at 7,242 feet, which is pretty high, actually, 7,400. How high is Pikes Peak, Mike? Do you know that offhand? You were just there.
Pikes Peak is 14,110.
Oh, wow. So it's double this,
Yep.
Almost double this, So, but this is the western part of the state. They start getting the mountains, the Rockies start coming up on the western side of the state, although they move further west when you start getting up this far north and move over into Idaho and stuff like that. The state's surrounded on the north by North Dakota, on the east by Minnesota, and southeast Iowa touches it, and the straight south is Nebraska, and the west is Wyoming and Montana. Montana is, again, just a touch of it, so not a lot of it there. It is, that's not what I wanted to tell you about. This is, here's the information. Talking about the grapes, there's no AVAs in Dakota, but let me tell you this is something I found. It says, the severe climate of the northern plains is partly to blame for the wine industry's slow growth in South Dakota. Bitterly cold winters and dry summers make an inhospitable environment for most of the vine types, except for the native Vitis riparia. And Dave last week was telling us about that. It says the riparia has been a little interest in the wine world, except as a phylloxera-resistant rootstock and for its cold, hardy genes. It is a wild grape growing here in... my engineer is digging around me here. I'm afraid she's going to drop something on my head. No. Ignore her, she says. She's pulling something heavy over the top of my head. Throughout the upper Midwest, riparia's greatest use has been in the parentage of many cold climate hybrids, including a South Dakotan original called Valiant, which is something Dave didn't tell us about last week. The aptly named Valiant was created at South Dakota State University in 1967, and it is cold hardy to as low as minus 70 degrees Fahrenheit. So, and a lot of the other grapes from that are growing there in South Dakota are from the Minnesota's University of Minnesota, which is the K Gray, Edelweiss, Winston Red, St. Croix, Frontenac, and a lot of French hybrids, Marechal Foch and Deschonac, and they also have sherries that they make with the Valiant grape. So a little bit of background on the grapes that are growing there in that area. And we're going to be talking to Strawbell Winery today. So I'm going to let Mike jump out here and go get Don on the line. And we'll talk to Don about what he's got there and what is available. And so it looks like he might have already gotten him on the line here. We'll get him on the show in just a minute, I'm sure he is bundled up. Straw Bale Winery is the name of the winery. Straw Bale is located in the southeast corner of the state. And so we will have Don talk to us about it. Yeah, you noticed I'm trying to kill a little bit of time here. Something I was going to pass on to everyone here tonight about sweet sales. I think I might have told you this last week. The sale of sweet wines has jumped to the roof in this country this past year. So that's one of the things that everyone, I'm sure, has noticed. Oh, we have Don on standby here. So let's get Don from Straw Bale Winery onto the air. Hello, Don. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
How are you guys?
We are doing great. We are warm, and even without the heater being on, we are warm and comfy down here in comfortable Florida.
We are not.
Mike just looked up your temperature before we brought you on and showed that it was minus 5 there.
Yeah, the high today was minus 3.
I don't know if this is a typo or not, but it says the wind chill is negative 30.
It's been between negative 30 and negative 40 all day, so.
Oh, geez. That's terrible.
Oh, that's unbelievable. That's
hearty souls we have.
Without question, yes, yeah. Oh, well, so while we're talking about the weather, so what grapes do you have in the ground, or what do you have in the ground that is surviving this weather?
You know, just about everything will survive. We use University of Minnesota hybrid grapes in the area, and that's the Frontenacs and the La Crescents and the Marquettes, and so they're all pretty bulletproof down to about 30 below actual air temperature. So,
so they will survive pretty well there.
They just shrug this off. So,
just like all of you people live up there.
Absolutely.
Do you have any fruits, anything that you make, any fruit you're growing?
Well, we make about 30 different kinds of wine.
Wow.
Here, and about, I'm going to say 6 or 8 of those are grape, and so the rest of our wines are fruit wines. And I heard you just before we got together that sweet wine is making a comeback, and or at least it's showing some growth, but we have always, in this part of the country, sweet wines have always been very popular, and we refer to them as country wines, and most of our ancestors grew up probably with, you know, Mogan David Concord at Thanksgiving or Christmas, or Manischewitz, and if they made wine, they would make a rhubarb wine or a chokecherry wine or something like that. And so we've just kind of taken that to the next level.
I see. Let's go through the wines that you make then. While we're talking about your wines, tell us about them.
Well, we make, a really nice dry red. We call it Red Barn Red. Let me back up a little bit and tell you a little bit about our place because...
Good. Thank you.
We're called Straw Bale Winery because our winery is made out of straw. We actually stack the bales up just like you would bricks and stuccoed over it, and we're probably the greenest winery in the area. The timber frame construction came from a windstorm in a national forest, and so we do lots of, my wife calls it repurposing, I call it dumpster diving, and that's sort of how we exist here. Our wine racks in the building were made from bleachers from one of the universities in the area. So, we really kind of make do with what we have here. So that's just a little bit about it. We live on a 100-plus-year-old homestead place that we bought about 25 years ago. And so we're about 6 miles from the largest urban area in the region, Sioux Falls, which is about 180,000 people. So we're close enough, but we're actually far enough away too. So,
is that why you're so close to Sioux Falls? Is that why you're getting the address of 127th Street because it's out of Sioux Falls?
No, because that's a state address that they use here. They start up in the far northwestern part of the state, and the address is 10,000 whatever, and so our address is 47215 257th Street. So at any time we're driving out in the country, we know how far away from home we are.
Really? That's strange. That's a good idea, though. I really can't fault that.
It's unusual. So we know, it gives us something to do when we're out driving around in the country.
Yeah. Are you and Susie natives?
I am, and Susie was an Air Force brat, and actually spent some time down in Florida. Is it Homestead?
Oh. Homestead,
or
very,
not Homestead?
Very.
It's the one up in the Panhandle. I can't think of the Air Force base up there.
What's the Air Force base in Panhandle?
Or Pensacola's up there?
Pensacola, yeah.
I don't.
Oh.
That's McDill? And then she moved around about every 2 years.
No. Yeah. So we got McDill here in Tampa. Pensacola's up
Eglin.
Eglin, that's what it was. Yeah.
Eglin. Okay. Eglin.
Yep, that's where she spent a couple years. So.
So she's familiar with the warmth of Florida.
Yeah. And I'm not.
And you're not. So, the winery came about because you all decided that you wanted to lose money, or is
yes. Yes, that's exactly.
Yeah.
You know full well how this works.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It just, we liked wine, and we had always sort of toyed with the idea of something, and I, I don't know what the right term is, if I can use value-added agricultural endeavors or agritainment. You know, we had looked at an apple orchard to buy at one point. We looked at Christmas tree farms. Somebody tried to talk us into growing asparagus at one point. And, you know, asparagus has a two-week season, and there isn't anything very romantic about growing asparagus. So
not asparagus, I agree with that.
We passed that one. But
yeah.
So we just kind of landed on this, and it's just been a great adventure. I mean, we've been doing it for, well, the winery's been open for, I think, 7 years now. And we're probably, we're the fourth largest in the state, I would say. We have upwards of 20 wineries, I think, in South Dakota right now.
Wow, that's quite
a few. You know, we sort of attribute a lot of that to the great research that's been done on cold hardy grapes because, boy, you know, we certainly couldn't grow what California does or what you grow in this climate. So it's been kind of a neat learning experience for us.
So what grapes do you grow?
We have Frontenac Gris, which is a grayish peach-colored grape. And then we have La Crescent, which is a really nice white that we grow here. And then I have a grower 5 miles away from us that grows our reds for us. And he grows Frontenac, and he has a little bit of Marquette, I believe. And then, there's a couple other varieties that he grows, K-Gray, which is a really nice white that we have. Reds have sort of been a struggle for us a little bit, and I think primarily because our growing season is short.
Mm-hmm.
And up until last year, we've really not had enough degree growing days to fully mature. But this last year, we got a great crop, and we're going to be very, very interested to see how that turns out. That's going to be very exciting for us. So,
I just noticed I was reading something right before you came on the air about the Valiant grape, which is from the University of South Dakota. Do you grow
Valiant
that?
Valiant is our grower did grow it. In fact, he's pulling it out. It's an interesting grape, and this was a grape that's probably 30 years old, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, they 67, 68, I think it's.
Okay, well, within 40, 50 years old, something like that. And it's a foxy characteristic, which means it retains the grapey nose and a grapey kind of a taste. So it's sort of a Concord-y kind of a taste, but it's not horribly well received as far as a wine goes. And we noticed this last year. We had a really dry last winter, the previous winter, and we had a late frost, and it really affected the Valiant a lot. It wasn't very productive at all. In fact, I'll say that where we would normally get probably a ton of grapes, I think he probably got somewhere around 40 or 60 pounds. So, I mean, it was severely affected by it.
Wow.
And we had a late frost, and I think that affected things quite a bit, too. So we do a fortified wine using the Valiant, and that works out pretty good. But other than that, it hasn't really proven to be a great wine grape for us.
Because that's one of the things that that article said that's real good for a lot of wineries making sherries out of it. It's good for fortified sherry style wines.
Yeah, don't know many people that grow it anymore. I mean, I think that. You know, some of these stronger Minnesota varieties have really overtaken. There's so many different things. Like the Frontenac, for example, we can make a dry style red out of it. We can make a rosé out of it. We can make a fortified wine out of it. Because it's just got a huge black cherry nose on it. And the struggle has been with the acid. It just retains a lot of high acid with it. And so it would lend itself to a sweeter wine with maybe an enhancement to a port style.
Is the Frontenac a French hybrid, or is that just straight University of Minnesota?
It is a University of Minnesota hybrid,
French-American
hybrid. Yeah, they. My understanding of how this whole program started is there were a couple of, I don't know, what we'd call them, horticulturists that started looking for wild grapes at the highest altitude and the highest latitude that they could find, and that's what they used for their grafting stock.
Uh-huh.
And so most of our hybrids that we have here are crossed with the wild grapes.
Uh-huh.
So they retain some of that that wild flavor, and I think Marquette's probably the closest one to sort of getting rid of that. Haven't had a lot of experience with it, but it's shown a lot of promise. But by and large, I'd say Frontenac is probably our workhorse in this part of the country, and an older variety would have been the Marshall Foch, which was a grape that was used quite a bit up here, but
going
out of favor.
This K Gray.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed that when I was talking about the grapes are growing up there. I looked up something, and is that also from Minnesota, University of Minnesota?
It is, but it was sort of a predecessor to the formal program, and it was, I don't know if you know about Elmer Swenson, but he was sort of the Johnny Appleseed of grapes in this part of the world, and that was one of his grapes, and it's got a neat story to it. He, he had hundreds and thousands of vines that he would do, and this was ES, I don't remember what the number was, but he got to name the grape, and his best friends were the Grays, and her name was Kay, so it was named Kay Gray, which was kind of neat. And we love it. It's just a wonderful white grape that we blend it down just a little bit, but it's got a really nice fruity taste. And
how's the acid on it?
The acid is high, but it's manageable. We do sweeten it about, 2% residual sugar, and it seems to work out okay for us.
And then we will
blend it with a – go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I'm finding an underlying theme at most of the grapes that grow up in that cold climate has very high acid.
Well, it's the nature of the season, I think, more than anything.
Is it? Okay.
We don't get bud break until late April at the earliest. And we may see a freeze, the 15th or 20th of September. So that doesn't give us a very long season in order to, ripen this fruit that we have. So so it's a challenge, for us all the time.
Yeah. We talk about grapes. What about the fruits? What fruits do you have?
Oh, our most popular wines are fruit wines. Black currant is by far our most popular wine. And that's currants. I don't know. I'm sure they don't grow as far south as you guys, but it's sort of the size of a blueberry, very tart fruit. It grows here and it grows north, and it's got five times the vitamin C of orange juice. I shouldn't say that to you guys, but
yeah, we're Florida. Watch it.
But it's just an inky dark purple fruit, and just makes a delightful sweet red wine that we make.
It's a sweet red, huh?
Yep. And then our second most popular would probably be our strawberry rhubarb. And I doubt that you guys have rhubarb down there either.
You're right again.
Rhubarb, my understanding, doesn't grow very well south of Omaha.
I grew up in around Kansas City, Missouri, and we used to have rhubarb there.
Okay.
My dad used to love a good rhubarb pie, but I grew fond of it myself. So, it can grow a little bit further south than that.
And so that's proven to be real popular. And I think it's because of where we are. Our ancestors, in the spring, the first thing that came up out of the ground that they could eat was either asparagus or rhubarb.
Uh-huh.
And they would, after eating canned meats or salted meats and beans all winter, they wanted something fresh. So.
Rhubarb.
So rhubarb's been a good wine for us. We do, we do raspberry wines, we do cherry wines, we do blackberries, we do, like I say, we have 30 different wines.
Do you grow all these fruits?
No, we have we have growers in different parts of the state that grow for us. There's a religious group out here called the Hutterites, and they live in communes and very resourceful. But we can call them and say, we need whatever it is as far as fruit goes, and they'll find it for us.
Oh, yeah? And
then they've got a group of, you know, their folks in the colony that will go out and pick the fruit and deliver the fruit, and so it works out really well for us, by and large. We do choke cherries, and we do pears, and just all kinds of stuff. So, and none of the growers are huge, by any means. These are not truck farms. These are just people in their shelter belt might have currants growing, or they might have choke cherries or whatever, and that's sort of how we do it. So.
I noticed something on your list of wine, a jalapeno wine.
Yeah, there was a beer called Pepper or Chili Beer a number of years ago. It was from Cave Creek, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, geez, I can do that with wine. And so we did. We use Niagara as our base, and then we just sort of steep jalapenos when we're fermenting about a pound of peppers per gallon of wine, and it's very nice. It's especially on a day where the high is 3 below 0.
Yeah, I can bet it would be warm up your insides on that.
Yep. Lots of ice fishermen drink it, and so it's. Of course, you don't have ice fishing down there either, too. So.
No, we had to stop that. People were drowning. So that pretty much took care of that. That reminds me of a joke. You mentioned ice fishing. I have to tell you this joke. A guy hears that ice fishing is really, really good, so he figures that he would go out and try some. So he gets his bucket, he gets his poles, his stool, his saw, everything that he needs for his ice fishing, goes out, walks onto the ice, cuts a hole in the ice, drops his line in with his bait. A voice from above says, "There are no fish in there." He pulls out the pole, he looks around, he looks up, doesn't hear anything else, drops the line back in the hole again. Again, the voice says, "There are no fish in there." He's getting a little concerned now. He looks around, still doesn't see anything, doesn't, no lights or anything. Drops the line into the hole again. Again, the voice says, "There are no fish in there." He pulls it out, he looks up, and he says, "Is that you, God?" The voice says, "No, this is the rink manager. There are no fish in there."
So,
I know, you're in the cold climate. You got hockey. You'd appreciate that. Mennonites, is that a... I just had my phone a while ago. What it was? Like in Pennsylvania.
These are Hutterites,
so.
They're sort of distantly related, but it's a. They came over from Germany via Russia, so they're Russian Germans, and they still speak German. I mean, it's sort of like, Amish, except they embrace technology.
They
are probably some of the most innovative farmers that I've ever seen in my life. So.
No,
they own turkey processing plants, and they own big dairies, and they all have a specialty. So it's very, very interesting.
I just want to run through this for the listeners out there: elderberry wine and choke cherry wine, chokeberry, cranberry, apple, raspberry, raspberry, strawberry, rhubarb, plum wine, pear wine. Cherry wine, blackberry wine, blackcurrant wine, brown cow. What the heck is a brown cow?
Well, brown cow is one that we were out in California visiting with some folks that make wine out there, and they had an interesting wine, and it's one that we use the Valiant for. So we start with Valiant as a base, but we had orange, chocolate and coffee, and then add a little brandy to it, and so it tastes a little bit like a Tootsie Roll.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It's kind of the choco vine is sort of hot,
right,
in some areas, and this is sort of a derivative of that, and it's just a kind of a fun wine that we put together. Januarys and Februarys are pretty cold and pretty slow here, so we have lots of time to experiment, and that's what we do.
And that's what you do. Well, the red bison buffalo berry. I've never heard
of a buffalo berry. Buffalo berries is sort of a, I think, a probably a native fruit. It grows out in the western part of the state. It's a berry that starts out yellow, turns orange, and then red. And it's probably a little smaller than a blueberry. Grows on a shrub or a tree that's got incredible spikes on it, and so you can't really go in and, you know, pick them. And the way they harvest them, we actually have some Native Americans out that harvest for us, and they put a tarp down and wait until the first hard freeze, and then they take a baseball bat and beat the tree, and it drops all the fruit onto the tarp. So
it falls on the ground.
So, and it's an interesting flavor. It's kind of got it's almost got a citrusy type flavor to it. Uh-huh. And the wine, it starts out as a real beautiful crimson color, but all of that color drops out of it, and it becomes a very clear wine. Much like I've seen with watermelon wine, you know, it just all the color just drops out of it. So it
retains the taste, but not the color.
Yeah.
Oh, what does a buffalo berry taste like? What would we look for in a taste of a
buffalo
berry?
I would say citrus would be the number one thing that would. And we have, we're out of it right now. There weren't any that were harvested this year because of our you know, we had such a strange weather year, and so we're going to be waiting a little on buffalo berry. But I would say mostly a citrusy type of a taste to it.
When you say citrusy, here in Florida, we grow 36 different types of oranges.
Well, I would say it'd be a lemony orange type taste.
Oh, okay.
You know, it wouldn't be lime or grapefruit. It would be, probably up in the lemon orange. Probably closer to orange than lemon. But it's another interesting wine that we have, and we've had. We've had folks. One of the other ones that you mentioned was the chokeberry, which is relatively new. Another name for chokeberry is aronia, and aronia is supposed to be like the new super health, you know, type berry that you're supposed to have. So, actually, there's a grower down around Omaha that has planted 180,000 of these shrubs. And, for either the fresh juice market or the wine market, and it's another, you know, it's just a deep dark red, almost black fruit that and in making wine it sort of has an herbal or a kind of medicinal taste to it. So, and that's one that needs to age for years. We've got some that's 3 years old, and it's just, you know, starting to come together. So, you know, in working with these fruits, there's really no university that's doing a lot of, you know, fruit wine research.
Yes, you're right.
You know, California's got a lot of things that they're doing, and Cornell's got a lot of stuff that they're doing, but on the fruits, you're sort of on your own. There's pockets of fruit wines around the country, and we have a loose network of folks that we can talk to about, you know, their experiences with stuff. For example, our cranberry wine, you know, that's one that's really, I don't know if it has ascorbic acid in it or what, but it just is really hard to try to get fermenting. Once it starts to go, it's fine, but it's just almost got something that prevents it from wanting to start fermentation. So.
That's a solid. What do you age your wines in? Is stainless steel?
We use some stainless steel. The majority of it is food grade plastic. Just because our turnaround is, you know, on some of our fruit wines is only 4 to 5 months. I mean, we can turn it around quite quickly. There's no, the tartaric doesn't precipitate out, and you know, we don't have to cold or heat stabilize the wines because it's different than grapes, so we can, you know, ferment them and rack them a couple times and filter it out, and away they go. So,
It's good to see that. Now, I'm finding a lot of wineries around the country that are using plastic, and that's why it's good to hear that you are too. It's something that's really coming in.
And we've got, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm more of a dumpster diver, and we came upon, you know, this part of the country is the world leader for ethanol, and the ethanol plants use pectic enzymes to, you know, break down the starch in their corn, the same that we do with our fruits, our pectic acids, our enzymes, and they buy their enzymes in 1,000-liter totes that are plastic from Switzerland. And guess what? Switzerland doesn't want them back. And so we get the food grade containers from the ethanol plants for $30 to $50 each. So we have 1,000-gallon totes that we get for less than $50. So it makes makes a lot of sense for us to use that. I mean, stainless has just gotten ridiculously
outrageous
priced.
Yes, it is.
And we used to, in this part of the country, used to be able to get 300 to 500-gallon bulk dairy tanks. Well, all of those small dairy farms have gone by the wayside, so those are harder to find too. But we do have some stainless. We do have some some plastic that we use. And the fruit wines would not benefit from oak at all. So we just, when we do use oak, we use oak chips, to infuse into our reds and that kind of stuff. But that's sort of what we do.
Yeah. The plastic is really becoming popular all over the place. And one of the main reasons is because the price of stainless steel, it has quadrupled in the last 6-7 years.
It went down a little bit, but you still really couldn't touch the stuff. And, nobody has said the detriment. I don't think there's a lot of detriment to it. So, we're not leaving it in there for 3-4 years, like if we do something like that, we do have stainless that we can use for that.
But they're saying now that some of the plastic you can leave it in for 3-4 years and it's not going to hurt. It's when you start getting longer than that, that it's might pick up some stuff, but I've talked to different plastic makers for the barrels, and they're saying do away from your stainless steel. It's, you don't need it anymore. Go cheaper and still get the same result. So temperatures, you mentioned a little bit about your temperatures, your summer temperatures. What do you average on the highs and lows in the summer during the growing season?
Probably, daytime highs, low 90s, and nights would be probably, upper 50s. In August, the highs will stay over 60, or the lows will stay over 60 at night. And it just depends. I mean, last year was I think it was an aberration. It was very hot, very dry, but the year before that was, quite a bit cooler. So it just depends on the year, and we do keep track of the degree growing days numbers that we get, and we try to put off harvest as long as we physically can, because every day means quite a bit to us for that.
Yeah, I can imagine up there you can squeeze every day you want the growing season. I noticed one other thing here, too, while we're talking about wines before we get off it. Mead. You make a couple, three mead wines here.
Yep. We have a neighbor a mile away that makes, or he's a beekeeper, and, we always have him hold off a barrel of honey for us, and it's an alfalfa clover honey, and we just actually released it was a 4 or 5 year old mead that we had an oak infused barrel aged mead that turned out just terrific. And so, mead we have found is a, I guess I'll call it an acquired market. They say that mead, sort of resurrects about every 800 or 900 years, and they say we're overdue, and so I hope we're on the front end of the mead explosion. But it's a different, we do a raspberry mead, we did a cranberry, we did a black currant, we did a an anise or a licorice type flavored one, and so they did okay, but it was just never a big unless there's a Renaissance fair around, and then we sell a lot of it. So.
Well, you mentioned that it's not gone up, but there's some meaderies that we've talked to and that are around the country that are doing extremely well. There's
mm-hmm.
a real big one in Pennsylvania, and I think, Mike, if you remember, wasn't it New Jersey where they were making a lot of meat? I don't know, but we're finding places that are doing meat quite a bit out there.
Yeah.
Maryland.
There's a big one in Colorado. I think Redstone or something like that is a big one out in that area, but it's something I think if you're going to do it, you really have to specialize in it. I think it's maybe got to be more of a focus. And
yeah, and these places are. I have, most of them are meateries now. So,
right.
That's what it is. Did you have any problems with the colony collapse destroying the?
He did. He had quite a bit of problem with that, but he's got, and I don't know, really what the cause of that is. He winters his bees down in Texas, and then he takes them out, I think, in February or March out to California. They use them for the almond.
Right.
And then brings them back home. So I don't know what the cause is, and they're kind of trying to determine what it is. And
they're still –
But he's doing okay. I mean, he's
– Good. That fresh honey like that, when you start getting them from those fields out there, it's just delicious.
Yep.
You don't have an AVA around your area, do you?
No, I think I think Minnesota is trying. I don't know if they got one or not. I know Nebraska or Wisconsin has a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And never been a huge deal for us, I don't think. It would be nice, but I don't know, geographically how we'd put it together.
And you'd have to be unique, and you guys, with the grapes you're growing and all that, are unique anyway, but people aren't familiar
right.
with it.
Yeah.
And so, the government, state government, federal government, love them, hate them, want to hug them, want to kill them,
Federal, let them. They're going to do what they're going to do. We haven't had any trouble with that. State government, South Dakota. If you look on a shipping map, we're one of seven states that doesn't allow shipping. And early on we thought that was a big deal. Right now, we don't think it's a very big deal. We have. I think South Dakota has somewhere around 700,000 residents in the entire state. Minnesota has 5 million. And I can ship to Minnesota. I'm 11 miles from Minnesota. I can ship there all day long. So fighting for 700,000 versus having 5 million, and it's not worth the battle. It's a wholesaler lobby type issue. And it's just not that big a deal to us.
Yeah.
And there's a bill in the legislature right now to try to allow shipping. And I had one of the lobbyists ask me, where we're at. And I said, we're neutral. We don't care. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it's not a big deal. I've been to the legislature twice this year already, and mostly concerned with tourism-type stuff because that's really of more value to us. South Dakota is the home of Mount Rushmore, and we're 350 miles away, but there are 2 million cars that drive 2 miles away from us going west every year, either to Yellowstone or to Mount Rushmore, and I'd sure rather get them, to take a 5-minute detour to come and see us.
No, well, that's very true. Yeah, you don't have to worry about in-state so much as just those tours come by.
Yep.
I understand that because we do a lot of tourist business ourselves down here.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
I really do understand that. The state government, though, I've noticed there. I, in fact, just looked at a shipping map today. I just pulled one up, and you are only one of seven states in the country that will not allow direct shipment. But is that direct
right.
shipment just within the state, or is that national, or how does that work?
It no winery can ship into South Dakota.
Oh.
And we can't ship to someone in South Dakota. And so, you know, I mean, we hear stories every day of it happening.
Yeah, well,
and it's too bad that the state doesn't realize that, because if they were just to allow it, there's quite a bit of revenue that can be generated to the state coffers for, you know, for the, you know, if they charge $25 for a license, there's 7,000 wineries in the United States. You know, if you just get a very few of those
yeah.
To pay that fee, gosh, that's all free money.
Yeah.
But again, it's not a huge, you know, a huge deal for us. We do have, within the state, we have self-distribution that we can do. And so we can deliver our wine to, we can sell wine in grocery stores in the state. And so we do a lot of that, and convenience stores and, you know, wine and liquor stores and that kind of stuff. So
how about fairs and events and Renaissance fairs and stuff like that? Can you sell to those?
Depends on what that entity has for a license, but the state has been very good about that. In fact, we have had, for about the last 6 or 7 years, we have had the Department of Agriculture, the State Department of Agriculture, has had a wine pavilion at the state fair that they
very
have helped us do. And so all the wineries have an opportunity to go there, and we... you know, we can sample our wines out. We can sell our wines by the glass or by the bottle or by the case, and so that's been a really good education thing, and it's a win for everybody, because it we actually know anecdotally that people are going to the fair, you know, just for that.
Right.
And we have people, you know, every year they'll come in the winery and says, "Yeah, I had your wine at the state fair, and you know, we wanted to come and visit you." So. You know,
where's the state fair held?
It's in Huron, which is about 2 hours from us.
Oh.
Fairly remote part of the state, and but it's, you know, it's nice. It's the big, you know, it's the big agricultural sort of
state fairs. That's what they are, basically agricultural shows. So.
Yep. And we've been just very pleased with that.
Let's see. Are you on any type of wine trail or wine? Passport thing or anything there?
I actually was the president of the wine growers a couple of years ago, and we had a passport program. But the problem that we have is, you know, I think the key to a wine trail is you got to be about 15 minutes to a half hour apart.
It would be nice,
yeah. And we have got, you know, we've got one winery that is 3 hours away from us. We've got another three that are 5 hours away, and we've got, you know, I mean, we do have a couple that are, you know, there's a couple east of us about 20 minutes, but, you know, it's not conducive to try. I mean, the passport, yeah, that's okay. An actual trail just really doesn't work, because you're not going to hit, you know, that many people.
Right.
We do have one of the tourism groups, which is the Southeast South Dakota Tourism. They actually have a brochure that they put together for the wineries in this part of the state, and it's the most requested brochure that they have. So it's nice that we get, you know, we have that going for us, which is very helpful. So
yeah, it seems to be. Mike, do you have any questions?
We're sort of on our own. We've taken to, you know, having events out here. We do have, we call it our summer porch series, and we'll start that in May and run through September. And we have music and food vendors and artists, you know, every Thursday night, and so that brings folks in. And we do a couple special events. We're going to have a folk fest here at the end of July as a fundraiser for one of the groups for music. We're going to call that the folk off. So you got to be really careful how you enunciate that. And so we, you know, that's what we do. We like to do events out here.
Oh, that sounds great. But you draw from where? The people come in from where?
for that, probably within a 45-mile radius, I would say. And that's, you know, we'll get 300 people show up every Thursday night, and it's just kind of part of what they do. And so.
Notice some of these other events that you have, Sangria Sundays.
Yep, we have music. Make a white and a red sangria and invite people to bring a picnic out and just enjoy the, you know, the Sunday afternoon in the country. So,
is that all these events, summer events, or
well,
doing?
Pretty much. We do actually Twilight Flights. We just finished that up. That's the two weekends prior to Christmas. We have wine tasting and hors d'oeuvres, and we have a helicopter that lands out here and takes people in to look at the Christmas lights in Sioux Falls.
Oh.
And then we come back and do dessert and dessert wine after that, and that's been very popular for us. In fact, it was so popular, we're going to do it for Valentine's Day. So.
Oh, very good. No lights, though. We're just going to fly around over the city.
Over the city, yep. It'll just be a romantic flight, and it's just spectacular, so.
Yeah, it sounds like it might be. Whining women. You know, no editorializing on that. What is that?
No, none at all. None expected. It's just what we do in, we'll do it October through probably April, and it's the second Thursday of the month. We just invite gals to come out, and it's sort of taken on a Pinterest life of its own, you know, where we have a theme and... Now, being from Florida, you probably don't know what a feather party is.
No, I don't.
Up here, around Thanksgiving, all the American legions and those would have they'd call them feather parties, and they'd play cards or different games of chances, and you could win a turkey or for Thanksgiving. And we're going to do that next Thursday, and then it's going to tie in with Pinterest, things that you can make with feathers, and so. We'll get, between 30 and 50 gals that'll come out and, brave the weather, and we'll have wine and soup and just a good time for a couple hours. So
a feather party. That's interesting. We may have to do something like that here. That sounds like that would be fun.
Well, we found that Pinterest is a growing, I don't know what you guys do for social marketing, but...
a little bit on Pinterest, mostly Facebook.
Facebook's been wonderful for us, I think, because of the demographic of... who we're trying to catch, but Pinterest is sort of intertwining itself with that for us now, too. So,
That's a possibility. We haven't jumped on Pinterest yet. That is a good thought, though. I like that. Mike, do you have any questions for Don here?
Well, you covered them. I was going to ask about the Twilight Flights because I love the flying part of it, and seeing the lights from a helicopter point of view sounds fantastic. And that's only 2 weeks. Did you say 2 weeks in December?
Yeah,
we do it
6 nights. And
okay.
When we first started, we did it. We started the Friday after Thanksgiving, and we ran it every weekend. And we're getting to the age where we just don't want to work that hard.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of this business. I mean, we're open all year. During this time of year, we're open Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. And like today, it was I was shocked that I had three customers. And,
wow.
And, last week, the highlight of the week was the garbage man came. So.
Well, you're getting wind chill of minus 30 there. So let's see how.
Yeah,
I've been keeping track of the weather up there. It's amazing how that temperature keeps falling. It's 52 here now, so I can't imagine.
Oh, you guys got to put another log on the fire there.
Don't you got that right. I know.
Yeah.
Pull out the long undies tonight. That's
bundled up
there.
Definitely.
But we haven't, we haven't had an extended period of cold. It's been 2-3 days at a time. Like Saturday, it's going to be above freezing again, We can tolerate that.
And you have a chance
of
snow tomorrow.
Now. What's that?
I think it says you have a chance of snow tomorrow.
20% chance, but bring it on. We can handle that.
You can handle 20%. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. We couldn't.
All not one spot.
The picture you have on the background of your Facebook page looks amazing. You have the winery there with there's snow everywhere. It's just a great scene. I love that. Love that picture. I saw that on Facebook. So, anybody else want to go out there and check it out, definitely look at that picture on Facebook. Did we talk about the soil content that you have there?
No, we did not.
No.
What do you have?
Probably a loamy soil, I would say, which is, you know, part sand, part clay, very well-draining soil here. I mean, it's, and we're, you know, we're next to some really high-production cropland. So it's got good fertility. We do augment it with about a half a cup of a 10-10-10 fertilizer, you know, in the spring, and that's really about all we need for any nutrition.
Wow.
We haven't irrigated. My vines here are about 9 or 10 years old, and I gave them, you know, 5 gallons of water when they were planted, and that was all they got until this summer. Yeah, we're in a severe drought here still. And I just I talked to enough growers last year that lost grape vines, and they think it was because they went into the fall too dry. You know, we have wind here, which you know, you guys probably don't, and I don't think Minnesota has the wind that we have. But boy, that stuff can really dry stuff out, and so
they're so flat, it's just blowing off the mountains right into you.
Well, we don't have mountains very close, so they're
it just blows it right across the plains. So you don't have to water too much. That was what I was going to ask. And
yeah,
so,
I've watered them, you know, 2 times, and that was both this past year. But and I don't sense that I needed to do either one of those. I mean, the leaves were still, you know, very green, very, you know, very succulent looking, and so it just was more of a preventive measure that I did. So
That's amazing. Anything else, Mike?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you very much. Very good.
Well, Don, give us
information.
You guys
come and visit us sometime.
Well, we definitely will. I mean,
make it in the summer. Come in the summertime.
I guarantee you it would not be right now.
Yep.
Give us all the information about Straw Bale Winery, your address, your phone numbers, websites, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, any way people can contact you
and
get a hold of you?
Well, you know, they can find all of those things on the website, which is strawbalewinery.com. We do keep track of Facebook probably pretty heavily. Twitter's probably, you know, second on that. And we're located in the southeast part of South Dakota, and you know, just north of Sioux Falls. So if you're coming out to see, you know, the sights this summer, drop in and say hi.
Take Interstate 90 to, looks like Interstate 29, and
right.
Go north.
Yep.
There you go. Fantastic.
Don, thank you so much for taking the time out this evening
to
talk with us. And if we are ever in that area, we will definitely make it to your place. And I'm interested in some of those wines, too. You know, that's what was that one? The jalapeno. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
we talked to a winery down in New Mexico, and there's a guy down there who makes a jalapeno wine, and he says he sells it out within a couple of weeks after he makes it every year.
It's just amazing. I mean, a lot of it is used for, you know, as a marinade or in cooking. I mean, I'll take and dump a bottle in chili when I make it, and it just adds a whole different dimension to it. So
sounds like it would. Well, thank you for your time tonight, and hopefully in the future we'll, I don't know how soon, but we'll try to get hold of you again and see how things are going and all that.
Great. Send warm thoughts.
That we always do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good one. Thank you. Bye.
All right. That was fun.
Yep. I don't know where the echo was coming from, but it wasn't too obtrusive, whatever.
If anyone out there listening to this on archives, we did get an echo from both Mike and I to that call tonight. Don't know why or how or where, but hey.
That's okay.
Hope it wasn't distracting.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah. So. Don mentioned something, and I want to revisit that for a second. Today, I was looking around, and 7 states cannot ship. Those 7 states are Montana, South Dakota, Utah, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama.
Yep. That's on the Free the Grapes, isn't it?
Free the Grapes has that. And those are the seven that can't do it. There are a few that are in negotiation. Kentucky, Pennsylvania, looks like Maryland and Massachusetts. Those are right now. I just saw the key to that, and I lost it here. Those are waiting legislative solution due in the court ruling within, you know, the first 6 months of this year. So, but everybody else has shipping, and that, you know, so it's just interesting what's going on. You looked at this map a few years ago, and there's like, you know, 10 times as many more red states.
Oh, yeah.
It's changing, and they're starting to realize that, you know, there's no reason. Well, like Don just said, you know, if they realize, you know, charge $25 for a license to ship into the state, and, you know, you get one from every winery in the country, you got yourself all this free money. I mean,
Not going to hurt. I mean, I don't understand what the problem is on these states, and it's, they're either dragging their heels or they won't even consider it. Well, what's the harm done? You know, I mean, I can understand Alabama just doesn't want it, but
they don't. They think the guy was telling us about that.
they're totally different. But it doesn't make any sense. I mean, and even if you have just a few wineries, what's the harm done by allowing this? And, you know, if you get a draw in it, yeah, that's extra income for you. And what did you have to do for it? Just say, yeah, okay, we can ship, you know? I mean, I don't see what the deal is.
Here's your license. You run it on the coffee machine, and here's your license.
Yep.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just like we talked to the wineries in Arkansas, and they said that they can ship up to Missouri, they can ship down to Texas, they can ship all over, except they can't ship across the street. I mean, you know, that's the way these laws are on these things. It's just, it's so ridiculous.
It is.
Yeah, you know, and they're not protecting the wineries in the state. If anything, they're hurting the wineries in the state.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the old argument is we don't want the wineries in the state to be hurt by outside shipments. Well, you know, that's not happening. You're not hurting them. You know, they can't ship either. So,
it doesn't make sense.
I know. I just looking for a box on that one. You know, we need to get a legislator on here on some of this stuff someday. If they ever come on the program, I don't think they will.
The cower down like the wholesaler we tried to get in touch with to come on here. The people who are backing this didn't feel strong enough to come on the program and talk about it. That's the interesting thing.
The ones who are against it, but the ones who backed it, the ones, you know, that's just odd, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're committed to something, then voice your opinion. That's all we're asking.
That's right. Obviously, feel otherwise. If you would like to get into, you mentioned this on the Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR, I just mentioned Straw Bale on there. I did a quick post on there, but there was a little something about a new website. When are we unveiling that?
It was a tease. We had to tease a little bit about that. We can unveil it any time. Are you ready to unveil it? We can, you know, make tonight the official. Official date, or if you want to wait a little bit until you tweak anything else on it.
I think, let me take one more look at it because last time I looked. I think everything is.
Are we ready?
I think so. It's pretty much complete. It's just, there'll be things added to it, but that could go on forever. Working on stuff.
You'll be tweaking it and playing with it and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as everything else, it's ready to go. Yeah. It has information on there. Good.
Okay. So here it is, the official, for real, official revealing of our new website. Mike has worked very hard on this. Actually, it looks great. I have to, you know, I mean, all kidding aside, Mike did a wonderful job on this. He's got a list of the wineries we have talked to over the last 4 years. He has got all sorts of stuff on it. I mean, it really is worth a check out. It's our new website, allaboutwinebtr.com.
Seems like everything is all about wine BTR somehow.
It seems like everything is all associated with that. We all just go full circle. But it's a good site. There's really a lot of information. And everything, everybody we talk to, there's a link to them on that site. And I'm sure Mike will be adding tonight's program the link to that real soon. So if you can't find it, or if you forget the address, or if our listener out in Oregon who jogs while he's listening to me, if you don't have pencil and paper while you're jogging, just go back and click on the website, and you can get a link right to it. So,
yeah.
And you did a good job. You really did.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed with that. And that's why we're trying to get closer and closer to let you start managing the winery's website, because you did such a nice job on that, too. So.
Oh. that one's still waiting in the wings there. It's still waiting in the wings.
It's not quite
there. There is a new website in the works for that, too. So, yeah, cool.
Very nice. New website for All About Wine. It's www.allaboutwinebtr.com. And tonight is the official unveiling of that site. So let's hear it from the people out there.
Excellent. Thank you. Wow.
There you go.
So
yeah.
Maybe in a week or so we'll post that on the Facebook picture.
Yeah.
Give you all an exclusive for tuning in, and then we'll unveil it on the Facebook.
There you go.
But
besides
that, there's different ways to contact us. If you want to be a guest, there's a page to be a guest on there, and gives a little some of our statistics about last year, and I think we covered this last week. Since the beginning of the show on Blog Talk Radio, because we've been on a couple of other networks. We've been on TalkShoe. We've been on 1,000 mics, I think, a long time ago.
Yeah,
and it kind of started like Ron and I were just talking to each other. I was learning a lot. I was like, the student, and I still am every day. I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's something new, Phylloxera, never heard of that before, but, I've heard about it continuously.
Now you're like an old pro. You can, Mike has actually taken over a couple of programs when I couldn't make it.
I can pronounce the words, but as far as defining them, I'm still kind of, I need a few more shows. But so we started off kind of like that, and then we hit Blog Talk Radio and kind of built it up from there. And since 2009, we've had over 70,000 people listening, and we're not talking to each other anymore. And
no,
that's,
we're actually talking to you people out there. We really appreciate that, too.
That's amazing. Yeah, we really thank you for that. In the archives and listening live, our live listeners are going up, and that's fantastic. Now it's kind of like, this is a show. Okay.
Yeah, it is. And Blog Talk Radio Fitness has a feature program, and I mean, we're all excited and a Twitter about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Twitter.
There you go.
Twitter. We're all a Twitter. Speaking of Blog Talk Radio, did you see their new opening page? I was confused. Yeah.
Yes, I did, and I thought the back of it, like where we're at on the studio and all that other stuff, was going to change too. But maybe they're. I think this just recently changed though within the last year, so I'm not going to worry about that. But the front end looked different. I haven't really gotten much into it, but
It looks different.
Are we still on?
We're still on. We're still streaming here on air.
So it's just a little. It's changed. The front end of Blog Talk Radio has changed a bit, and I just haven't gotten used to it yet. Haven't really looked into it, but
I haven't
cool.
either. But, cool. But back to it. Thank you all for listening. I mean, Blog Talk Radio has recognized the program because of you guys out there listening. So we do appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And check out the site again. If you want to be a guest, you want links to our previous guests that we've had on the show, and I just added Strawbell to it. There's also contact us, and our Facebook feed is on there as well, so you can see our Facebook feed from there and what we're typing and all that stuff. So and I believe I put the player on there too. So there's the little built-in player, so you can listen to the show.
Oh, you can link it right there.
It's on there. And links to our iTunes downloads. If you you want to download the feed from iTunes, links to Blog Talk Radio show page and Facebook and Twitter as well. So go visit it. allaboutwinebtr.com. This is, I guess, the official opening. And
the
official
opening. It looks good. You did a good job.
Thank you.
It looks real good. So. Oh, you're quite welcome.
Okay.
I think we're done for tonight.
We are. We have a guest scheduled for next week already. That'll be February 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern time here in the U.S., depending on where you're at. You have to convert that for your time zone. But we'll have Bob with Prairie Berry on with us. And he is in South Dakota as well. He is in Hill City, South Dakota.
Which,
and
I think Prairie Berry is the biggest winery in the state.
Okay.
I think it's the biggest one in the state. That's what I think. We'll have to ask, but I think it's the biggest one in the state.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, we'll have to see what he has to say on that, and I'm sure it'll be very interesting and very cold up there. So
-30 wind chill. I
know. And I was watching it go down. It went to like -33, and I go, how far can this go? That doesn't make any sense. I'm really sorry, you people in South Dakota and up in the north, you had to deal with this kind of thing. It's sad.
We're not laughing at you. We really aren't.
No. That's amazing. A good excuse to come in from the outside, get out of the, I got to do a show, that kind of thing. That's amazing. But that picture, seriously, that picture that they have, I looked at that, the winery in the snow and everything. It's on, I did a like thing on All About Wine BTR on Facebook. And
good.
So you might see it there, but it looks amazing. It's just really nice shot. But we'll have Prairie Berry, Bob with Prairie Berry on next week. That's the 7th again at 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Hope you will join us then, and hope you enjoyed the show. And if you're listening live or in the archives, appreciate it again. And we'll see you all next week.
Next
at
Thursday.
7 p.m. Yeah, be sure to tune in. And
we'll
see you then.
One more comment. Whoever you're cheering for the Super Bowl, hope your team wins.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up Sunday evening. So hope your team wins. And if you got lots of money on it, you shouldn't be doing that. I read something that said that in the world, something like $8 billion is lost on the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Well, I've got
that
my
doesn't,
I've got yeah. I've got my numbers. So. I didn't say that.
No, there you go.
No, I don't have any numbers on this game.
Cheer for your team, whoever. We won't draw any sides on this. No. We're all about wine.
That's right. Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you all very much for tuning in tonight. We'll see you next week.
Yep. All right, everybody, hold your wine glasses up, get on the floor, and let's dance.
Everyone dance.
Here we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting.